All right, so now we're up to about 1950. You're going to Birmingham to visit your cousins?
Yes. You want, Maria, you want to make coffee or what?
Mom, you're not going to be around forever, and now you're still fresh. Before you actually can't remember anything, I want to interview you.
Getting there, so you don't have to worry about it.
No,
it's already there.
So that's where we're gonna put it on tape. All right. Okay. So hang on, I'm interviewing now. So quiet on the set. So tell me about you got a scholarship to the Art Institute. And you mentioned at one point that you thought that some other guy should have had it, not you.
Oh, absolutely.
So tell me how you got it and all this stuff.
Absolutely. I was still in Englewood High School, and I got this scholarship. There were three of us students who were taking art as a major, myself and two black boys. And it was obvious to me that they were far superior than I in art. One guy was already sculpting. The other guy was doing a lot of figures and faces, and all of a sudden, my pictures they pasted our pictures in a competition, and the one I had put up, which I believe was called Conflagration or something like that, won an award, and went to the Museum of Modern Arts in New York. So then I got this scholarship to the Art Institute on a yearly but concurring basis, you know, which means that as well as I did, if I did well, I'd get the next year and so on and so forth. Anyway, the first year I was there.
So when did you go? Did you go there after you got out of the service?
No. I had gone there while I was at Lindblom. I had already been, but I was going there, and I didn't like what I was doing, but they were telling me I was doing great. I couldn't draw a face. I couldn't draw a figure. I couldn't do nothing. And I said, this is ridiculous. A, I'm in another school. B, I'm not a good artist. They said, oh, no, you don't understand. And they were telling me what I was drawing. And I said, that wasn't the intent that I drew it. Anyway, I got to the point where I said, you know what, I'm not going to continue. You people don't know what the heck I'm making, and you're telling me it's good stuff. So I stopped. Stop being an artist. I figured they tell me I'm doing something right, and I'm telling I'm not doing what they say I'm doing. So I left it. It's a shame that scholarship did not go to either one of the boys who were good artists and had great talent as opposed to mine. I think I just took art as a major, so I could get a good mark, you know, an A instead of a C.
So after you're out of the service, you're working at the restaurant time, right?
Right.
And what else are you doing?
I was going to college.
Where at?
Roosevelt University. I was attending Roosevelt. I got in about 3 years.
Now, and you moved to the north side then, right? The family had moved to the north side?
We didn't move to the north side until, I think, 54, 53 or 54. I don't really remember the date.
So right before I was born?
Oh, yes, before you were born. We were living on the north side, maybe 52. But we moved to the north side. We bought this home on Oconto. My dad bought it. I remember that when my mom looked at it, and She wasn't crazy about the home. It didn't have big rooms. You have to remember, where we were living on the south side, we had large and adequate rooms for everybody in this two-story building that was owned by a lady by the name of Mrs. Griffith. And my dad was going to take her to this bungalow on the north side. And my mother said, well, she says, I don't think I'm going to go. And my dad says, well, I'll tell you what, I bought it. And what I'll do is you and the boys can stay on the south side, and I'll pay the rent and the expenses, and I'll move to the north side. Because driving back and forth an hour each way was just beating me up, and I can't pay attention to my business. This sort of convinced my mother that she was going to move north with us.
So the restaurant was at, when was the restaurant purchased at Belmont in Harlem?
1939, I think, 1939 or 40. They purchased a restaurant before the World War started, long before the World War started. And it was, my dad had been a driver for the pie company and was their best driver as far as income. And he was making good money. But like he said, after he bought the restaurant, his boss came over to talk him to come back. And he tried to talk my dad into coming back. He says, Dad, you're making over $100 a week. How do you make that kind of money here? My dad says, no. He says, I make $25 a week. He says, but Mr. Corrales, remember one thing. Every penny of that $25 is mine. The $100 I was making with yours, I was paying union dues, I was bribing police officers so I could double park, I was paying off the managers of Kresge's, I had to give free pies to a lot of the restaurateurs to keep my business, and all that came out of my salary. Because you never gave anybody a dime. Which, I agree with you. It wasn't your position. But I did, to keep the business and keep working. So, $25 a week here, I'm more than satisfied with. Because it's all mine.
So, you're working at the restaurant, and occasionally you took a vacation.
Yes, I start taking vacations about 1950-51. We would go to Birmingham. My cousin, Catherine, by that time, had one child, was expecting a third, and I would go to Birmingham and then on to Florida. But in the interim, her husband's best friend was getting married in Fort Wayne, and so I and my cousin Peter Spear were going to be groomsmen for this man, and that's where I met your mother, because she took Gregory, or my cousin Catherine's husband Gregory, broke his arm, and he couldn't go, so Maria went to keep Catherine company while Gregory stayed home.
In Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Fort Wayne, Indiana. That's where I first saw your mother.
Now, how old was she at the time?
14.
How old were you?
22.
Okay.
About that.
And then what happened?
Well, then I knew her. Nice, spirited young lady. So I continually would take a trip to Florida and always managed to stop by Birmingham and so on and so forth. And then I finally, of course, my standard joke is I got drunk one night and she could talk me into marrying her. But really, I waited until such time and I proposed to her and she accepted and we got married. 1954.
So you moved to Chicago and you moved in with your parents. What was that like?
Well, that was for a year until while we were locating a home. I had a piece of property. And then we built our home. And I think we moved into our house in 56.
Later than that. Because Chris was still a baby at that house, too. Chris was born in
57. We moved into our house. And we lived in Osceola, on the 3300 block of Osceola, until such time as we then decided in 60 or 61 or 2 to move to Des Plaines for educational purposes, really. It was to be close to her sister, who had married my best friend, and we're living in Des Plaines. And for better educational reasons, we had Gigi at the time, and I just couldn't see raising three kids in a school system which was really not good. So we moved up here, and our three children were then going to attend Brentwood Grammar School in the western portion of Des Plaines.
So let's go back to when you were waiting to get transferred back to the States, and you met Tom Nahabedian.
No.
No.
I didn't mean Tom. I mean met Mark.
Mark, I'm sorry. Mark. No.
Yeah. When you're going back into the service, when the doctor pronounced me that I should indeed get the operation, which means that I was going to be transferred back to the United States, they sent us to a replacement depot down near Cherbourg, which was actually in an area where we were all going back on a hospital ship. And there, when I walked in to this one tent, I saw a fellow whom I recognized was Mark Nahabedian. He was an athlete who had played baseball and basketball for Steinmetz High School. Steinmetz High School was reasonably close to our store at Belmont in Harlem, it being located on Narragansett, which was approximately a mile and a half away. And the boys, sometime after basketball practice, during the war, would come in and get a cup of coffee, glass of milk, a bottle of pop, piece of pie, whatever. And I knew Mark from there. So then Mark again and I became quite close. And we were shipped back, and when we got on board ship, it was Mark and I and two other fellas who we played pinochle for 6 days coming back from France to the United States. We played pinochle on board ship continually. We didn't want to stay down below in the hold, so we commandeered this gangway, and the four of us played pinochle continually for 5 or 6 or 7 days. I don't remember what the length of the trip. I think it was 5, but we played pinochle till we got back to the United States. Then we got off at Camp Kilmer. I was sent down to, at Camp Kilmer, we got the opportunity to make a phone call. So I called my parents' home, where I knew I'd catch my mother, and somebody, some young girl, answered the phone. And I says, who the hell is this? And she says, Magdalene Derzes. Who's calling? I says, Peter Eugenius. I want to speak to my mother. I sure in hell don't want to speak to you. And that was my first introduction to the Durses family. She was up here to buy a wedding gown to get married to Tom Bondurus. Of course, I met her. We became friendly, blah, 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 blah. They were here for my cousin Kay's wedding to Gregory. And that's how I, you know, became very close with the Durses family, which is the family from which my mother-in-law, Christine Grammis, was a member of.
So let's go back. There's some.